It'd be difficult to get more challenging and more pertinent readings for me as I begin now formally and publicly my ministry as your parish priest. This whole call not to be the greatest, not to be the one that is at the heart and the focus of all of this, but indeed to offer my life to you as a servant. All of these teachings that Jesus offers to the disciples continue in this series, particularly in this Gospel of Mark, where the disciples just struggle to make sense of what it is that Jesus is offering to them. In some ways, these last few weeks, we could subtitle these stories as the Chronicles of the Clueless Disciples. You know, they continue to struggle just to get it. In the passage just before this one, where there's a story of the healing of a young boy with an evil spirit in him, and the disciples aren't able to cast it out. And Jesus is so exasperated with the disciples. You know, how much longer do I have to put up with you? And I kind of wonder often in prayer, you know, how often does the Lord say that about me? Oh, Richard, really? How much longer do I have to put up with your stupidity and your hard heart and your inability just to get what I'm trying to offer to you? But in some ways, of course, the disciples, you know, maybe we should give them a little bit of slack in all of this, because again, earlier in the gospel, Jesus has been berating them because they've been taking things at the literal level. And he keeps saying, no, you need to look for the meaning underneath, because he taught them things in parables, and he would teach the crowd, and then he would take the disciples aside and teach them specifically. So perhaps when he was saying these clear things, the disciples were pondering, well, okay, that's the surface level. Maybe there's something else, and maybe they're struggling to work out what the deeper level is. Of course, there's other things, is that this whole concept of someone dying and rising again. Yes, the Jewish people in general believed in the resurrection of the dead, and the resurrection of the body at the end of time. But they had certainly, there's no sign of any belief whatsoever that there would be one person who would be raised from the dead. That just wasn't present in any of the Jewish scriptures or any of the commentaries on the scriptures. And certainly not this sense that one person being raised to life within the present age, there would be a sign that was marking a breaking in of a new age. Of course, Judaism didn't have this concept of the past, the present, and the future. There was really only two time periods within Judaism. There was the present age, and then the age, the life of the age to come. But that's a story for another day. And so we can get this sense of why the disciples are struggling so much along the way of this journey now, heading through Galilee, heading towards Jerusalem. And so along this way, Jesus continues to teach them and to offer them this insight into what will happen on that day when he will be handed over. And we begin to see, just as we saw last week, that on the way punctuates these particular chapters of the Gospel of Mark, or this phrase being handed over. In the Greek, it's paradidotainai. And it's this whole sense will be, you know, really a very characteristic phrase. 15 times over the next few chapters until the end of the Passion narratives, we'll have this phrase of Jesus being handed over to the Roman authorities, of Jesus being handed over to death, and this whole sign that this is the way of the Christian, this is the way that will mark and shape anyone who follows in the footsteps of Jesus. But again, the disciples just continue to struggle with this. They could just, what are they doing when they're walking along the way? They're arguing about who's the greatest. You know, just like the little children will often argue about such things, and these supposedly great leaders of our church are there arguing about the same things. You know, I'm sure that the cardinals, when they get together, don't kind of argue about whose hat is bigger than the others. Maybe they do, who knows? But this whole sense that, of course, we've seen this right across the centuries. We see it in our own hearts. We see it present in this whole, the whole sense of the fallen, corrupted nature. And Jesus is wanting to offer a new way of understanding the whole place of power and significance and greatness within the kingdom. At this point, as he calls the disciples together, we're told that he sits down because it was the posture of the rabbi, the master, the teacher, to sit down. Normally, of course, everyone in the crowd would be standing. We've kind of reversed the whole thing, that the person who's teaching stands and everyone else sits. In the ancient world, it was the other way around. Everyone would stand and the person who was teaching would sit as the sign of that new role and that place of the teaching office or teaching authority. He's trying to think of, how do I get through the thick skulls of these disciples, these followers of mine? How do I offer to them this new insight into this way of greatness? And he says, of course, it's not the one who is being served that is significant, but the one who is able to serve, the one who offers himself, the person who is able to share that way of life, of pouring out your life in service to others. That's the way of greatness, not the power, not the measure, not even your association with Jesus, but this offering of yourself. That lies at the heart. And there happens to be a little child present in the room, and so he calls this little child over and says, this is the way that you are to live. Now, we kind of think of children as cute and wonderful little creations, but in the ancient world, children were just nothing, nobodies at all. In fact, the word that Jesus would have used in the Aramaic for the word for child is the word talia. And this word talia is exactly the same word that you would use for a servant or a slave, because it was just the same concept. That's all the children were useful for. You know, they weren't able to go out and earn money yet. They weren't old enough to have any kind of responsibility. They might be able to help out around the house. And so that was the sum total of the usefulness of a child. No better than a slave, no better than a servant. I had no rights, no innate kind of sense of them even really being humans in equal dignity to adults. And of course, in the ancient world, this is in certain societies today, there were only two stages of development. There was the age of the child and then the age of the adult. Teenagers and all of that is a very recent, very modern invention, this whole kind of period of slow transition that can often, particularly in men, take about 20 or 30 years. But this whole sense of there was only these two stages. The child was nothing, and then an adult, this growing into maturity, and then you were useful. Then you were able to take your proper place and start discussing and arguing about who is the greatest in the kingdom of God. But this whole call that Jesus makes in inviting this child to come and be recognized as someone of equal dignity and someone who is able to experience this grace, totally transformative. In fact, sociologists tell us that it's passages like this and then the early church beginning to adopt this practice that began to radically change the whole way that the world understood and viewed the place of children and allowed children to have a proper place within society and not just be the absolute scum of the earth. And so this transformation that's slowly beginning to happen in the ministry of Jesus, as these disciples, these thick, slow disciples, nothing like anybody here, but this powerful call that these disciples are being invited to surrender, being invited to find their proper place, not in greatness, not in the way that you dress, not in any of these measures that our society unfortunately continues to say, yeah, they're the significant people, they're the ones that you should honor, they're the ones that you should revere. But no, this way of simply seeing ourselves in service, in humility before the Lord, offering our hearts, giving ourselves in service to one another and to the Lord. That's the way of greatness. That's the way of life. That's the way that we're invited into in our worship today.